Cutting through the clutter. This is Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk TNT.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT. Now, the sun was shining all weekend in Britain. There were stag parties and hen do's going on in every city centre in every part of the UK. Blow-up dolls aplenty, sashes adorning drunken ladies, just like I like. And summer has definitely arrived. Many of you know that I worked as a night manager in hotels for over a 20-year period. Some nights were quite peaceful. Not many. And some nights were wild and unruly, as you'd expect in hotels with 500 guests or so staying. Brits really know how to push boundaries when they party. And this was always fascinating to behold. In the nighttime, most people became someone else. I saw the most calm and well-to-do sorts become something completely different when enough food and drink had been applied. The character of those I met would change drastically in no time. I'd see them sober at the beginning of the night, and I'd see them crawling around on all fours and barking by the middle of the night. The same people who were often businessmen and women, professionals, celebrities on occasions, politicians and civil servants, yet, however professional they'd initially pretend to be, they soon became unruly, opportunistic, and self-centered once the lights got dim. Years of seeing people living different personas taught me loads about human nature. We are very often pretending to be a certain way, but given the right pressures, we all change quickly into something much more base. The pretense of professionalism is maintained by millions. It fools most, but then when someone gets caught out for not being the image they meticulously created, or for just being simply human, we love it. We love to point at a hypocrite. It is gold to us. Seeing hypocrisy in action often makes us feel less like hypocrites. It helps solidify our own world. It comforts us, but it's often an illusion. We are all capable of being hypocrites. That includes me. As I look at social media today, I see hypocrites galore arguing in the United Kingdom. The Labour Party faithful are pointing at Rishi Sunak as he's using fear to sway voters. He's warning of AI appointing at Rishi Sunak as he's using fear to sway voters. He's warning of AI, unfettered migration, and international conflict destabilizing the world, while he's also working behind the scenes to exacerbate those issues in particular. But the UK Labour Party also helped create these issues and then use them for political expedience. The dangers of AI are all real. Both parties will push the agenda forward, will incorporate AI into the police, into the army, and into our everyday lives to survey us. Labour and Tory party, Democrats, Republicans, it doesn't matter, they'll all do it. Both in America and in Britain. Mass migration and its negative consequences are real. Both parties will use it as a tool to gain political expedience. The international conflicts will cause global instability and will all lead to further conflicts. Both parties will support the ongoing crisis in Ukraine, which was originally exacerbated by Western meddling in the region via Western NGOs and intelligence agencies. And Britain is one of the core reasons why the conflict in Palestine is raging, by promising the land to the Jewish people in the first place and then supporting 75 years of genocidal action in the region. There is zero difference between these parties anymore. They are both hypocrites. They are no different. There's no difference between those who vote for these parties either. They are also hypocrites if they continue to vote in this way. If you are out campaigning or protesting against any of the major issues of the day, then you should definitely do some research first. The more you'll learn, the more you realize the level of your own hypocrisy. And maybe one day you'll stop voting for genocidal party A and genocidal party B, regardless of the color of their rosettes. Live by the same principles when it's light outside as you do when it's all gone dark. Now, if you've missed your favorite TNT show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on TNT website. We are also on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbeam, iHeart, and YouTunein, sorry. Now, there is no reason to miss out on anything on TNT.
It's the stuff.
What citizen wouldn't want to make American great again?
People are talking about.
Vilifying MAGA, it's just not going to work.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So, an investment fund founded by a controversial billionaire named Bill Gates, don't know if you've heard about him, has reportedly raised tens of millions of dollars in search of a vaccine that will help reduce methane emissions coming from the burps and the farts of cows and other livestock. Yeah, that's what they're doing. Here with the story, join me once again, is TNT News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus, welcome. I missed you in the first hour. I'm glad you're here with us. Tell us more.
Yes, sir. So first of all, let's not forget that Bill Gates is one of the controversial billionaires, unlike some of those billionaires who aren't controversial, because, you know, we got to be fair to all the billionaires who have zero controversy surrounding them whatsoever. We know they're all out there. We know them by name. Don't make me think of them because I'm having trouble, because they don't exist. Anyway, just wanted to point that out real quick. First of all, second of all, I suppose, Johnny, shout out to Mark Morano, whose website, as well as the Gateway Pundit, are the only two places that exist on the internet that I have to thank for bringing this to my attention, because otherwise I would have completely missed this. It is one of these instances where it was reported briefly in like a paragraph long article, if you can call it that, on Axios. Late in the evening, I believe, or late afternoon on Friday, while everyone's getting ready to have a weekend. No one pays attention. So here we are. That's how they do these things. So I'm glad we caught this. But yes, Mr. Gates, y'all know him as the guy who brought us the pandemic. He co-founded Microsoft. He is apparently behind an organization seeking to vaccinate cows with the aim of preventing so-called climate change, because all of this makes perfect sense. According to the report from Axios, Gates is the leader of an investment fund behind Arkea Bio. I'm going to spell this for you. Arkea Bio. So Arkea Bio. It's a Boston pharmaceutical company which is seeking to develop a livestock vaccine that will help reduce global methane emissions. Yep. Reporting here from directly Axios, it says Arkea Bio, a Boston developer of a vaccine to reduce livestock methane emissions, raised a $26.5 million in venture capital funding led by an investment fund founded by Bill Gates. Why it matters, according to Axios, that's how they do their thing. Caring about cow farts or burps has become a political punchline, but they're estimated to create more than 5% of global greenhouse gases. Vaccines could be a relatively low-cost, scalable solution, particularly as food demand increases. And then I believe this is part of the Axios report. The whole thing feels a little dystopian, giving animals injections so they cook the planet a little less before we cook some of them. But agribusiness sailed over the dystopian hurdle long ago. Okay. Gateway Pundit reports here, Gates is notorious for his obsession with vaccines and was a staunch advocate of the COVID-19 jabs, despite the fact that it was neither safe nor effective. Last year, the Gateway Pundit reported about how Gates had invested in something called Ruminate, R-U-M-I-N, the number 8. It's an Australian climate technology company exploring dietary supplements for cows that will similarly stop them from farting. Quote, Ruminate's most advanced product reproduces the bioactive contained in red seaweed and has been shown to reduce methane production in livestock rumen by up to 95%, whether in liquid, solid, or slow-release dose formats, end quote. That's what the company said in a press release at the time. At the World Economic Forum conference this year in January, Gates also explained how, quote-unquote, next-generation vaccines promise longer duration, broader coverage, and the shift towards needle-free administration. Gates said, quote, we make sure that for all these vaccines, there's enough capacity, there's competition, so the prices keep going down and we will have new vaccines. We'll have a TB vaccine, malaria vaccine, HIV vaccine, and even the things like COVID vaccines. We need to make them have longer duration, more coverage, and we're going to change, instead of using a needle, to use a little patch, end quote. Well, Johnny, apparently we're also going to have a vaccine for cows to stop them from farting, but we don't know yet if it's going to be in the needle jab form or a little patch. Maybe they'll just slap a little patch on the cow's ass and call them good. But what say you, my friend?
Yeah, there's loads of potential jokes, seeing as the Microsoft founder is moving in that direction and all of that, but none of this is actually a joke, because you know there's a evolution to the vaccine technology. Once upon a time, calf lymphs were used to vaccinate people from smallpox by getting a needle and making an actual blade and making 4 incisions into the skin using a piece of calf lymph. And then, of course, we have needles that came in afterwards, and now we're going to have patches. But they've already started looking into what the next stage is, and the idea of you not thinking about having, you know, that needle, that something going into you and hurting you, it obviously puts a load of people off taking vaccines anyway, because the first thought of it is, oh, you're going to hurt me to make me feel better. And that, you know, that feels, of course, a bit peculiar, the idea of that within medicine, especially. We all know there's oaths attached to not hurting people within most medical institutions. But the next stage, this idea of putting a patch on someone so you no longer feel it, well, that's followed by the next stage, which is having nano vaccines that you don't even know you're inhaling and come and grow out of the ground alongside the things that we need to keep us alive. These people are beyond repair of the mind. What they're doing is just, they are heading towards a way to kill everybody at high speed, whether they want to or not. That's what they're doing. They're heading towards technologies where we no longer have human control. And we were talking about this in the first half about AI and the financial system. What happens when the financial system does something and we don't understand what is done because it's all run by AI? And how can we go back and change it? And where do we even start when it's all run by AI? It feels like we're losing control. And that control of things like injections and of things that go in our body is that we have to give consent over to someone to inject us. And mainly that can be maybe like poised as, well, you have to do that because they're going to hurt you in some way, or it's going to hurt and you have to be in agreement with it. Take that away and we're entering very dangerous territories. And of course, they're going to aim at the weakest of us, of life on Earth, which is the cows and the sheep and the other things, because those they can target. But those are the things that we every day. I mean, these we're going to be eating the meat, we're going to be drinking the milk, and we're going to be taking in these new vaccines. Don't worry, the cows won't be harmed when they're given the vaccines. It'll just be a patch on their arm or leg, because, you know, just like us in the future too. So this is terrible times, because what it suggests is that there's an evolution process that is being the consent is being manufactured for, that will lead us to the new wave of future vaccines. Was there any other talk about where this evolves to in any of the newspapers?
No, because like hardly any reporting about this. So I'm sure we'll all hear about it soon enough, because I mean, I keep thinking about them spinning this avian flu thing too, right? So I had already heard talk of them trying to vaccinate the cows against avian bird flu or whatever, which is ridiculous. And now this, I think the next generation of vaccines is actually going to be more to do with consumables. I think it will be slipped into our food. That's an easier way to do them as a delivery method. And then what you suggested as well, you won't even know you're breathing it, because they're just spraying it through the air conditioners, the houses, the chemtrails. Who knows? Yeah. It's pretty wild stuff, Johnny. So remember when there was a big dispute over genetically modified food items like crops, GMO food? We're going to see the same kind of thing here. We're not, like, I don't know about you, but I don't want to eat meat from a cow who's been vaccinated with this experimental stuff. I don't want to drink milk from a cow that's been vaccinated with this experimental stuff. So are we going to see aisles in the grocery store someday, Johnny, where it says unvaccinated food here? Maybe. We'll see.
No, I think we're more likely to see them taking meat off the market just like they want to. That's their agenda, isn't it? To make us not trust the food that comes from nature, and instead trust their food that they make in laboratories. And we are heading towards that. And just looking over at the chat, just to round this up, Loud says mRNA in the food chain. It's true, completely true. And also, the Dark Commission says, can we have elite vaccines, please? I think we know what you mean there. I think we'll probably end on that one there, Dark Commission. Thank you very much, Ruckus. I'll see you tomorrow with some more news, all right?
Yes, sir. Talk to you then.
Awesome. You're listening to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's James Freeman.
Nelson Mandela said to be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others. The truth is, too many people have taken their eyes off the ball over the past 50 years. Too many good people have lived in the hope that electing members of parliament to take care of things for us every 5 years will keep things on the straight and narrow. The result of this is that we have allowed too much power to be concentrated in the hands of too few.
James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Caution. You are about to hear
today's News Talk and the voice of freedom.
That's what this country's all about.
Today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk, TNT. Now, my next guest is about to come on. I want to say to everybody in the chat, hey, remember, if you have any questions, we like an interactive show, so get involved. I'm really happy with the questions that have been coming from the chat, of course. It's brilliant. Love my chatters, that's for sure. Man, my next guest, who I have in on, is a passionate researcher and a passionate artist as well, who I've been wanting to speak to for a while. Paul McGowan is an artist and social commentator who has been cancelled many times by the mainstream media, addressing emotive issues. His work often provokes strong reactions, which we like here on the Johnny Redmore Show. He studied art at Falmouth, Winchester, and Bath School of Art. He's done a lot of research on a lot of things, and so I'm really looking forward to discussing his work today. Paul, welcome to the Johnny Redmore Show. How are you?
It's great to be on, Johnny. I'm really good today, and I'm really looking forward to getting into our conversation.
Yeah, well, you're obviously, you know, you get involved in a lot of things, and you have a mouth on you, don't you? You say stuff, which, of course, the people in authority don't like so much. But you've been a professional artist for many years. How did you start on that journey, and what type of themes did you focus upon?
Well, I'll tell you, I honestly fell into it, but I always knew it's what I wanted to do. But when I was younger, I never even considered it as a career plan. I had a really weird route there. And part of it went through when I was younger, I worked in the fashion industry and I designed a collection and it sold immediately to Browns, which was a really good start. But I realized I didn't want to do that, but it gave me lots of confidence. So I thought, well, I want to be a painter. So I started painting and I started exhibiting before I even went to art school. And I sold my first works before I went to art school. And then before I knew it, when I was just went to art school, when I was in my mid 20s, I was late to go there. I got picked up by a gallery really early. And then I realized they didn't know that I was still at art school and my first year. And I had to keep it quiet for years. But I did two solo shows of them without them knowing I was a student. But also the first works they ever took off me, when I went down to see them after they'd been framed up, they got sold before I even got there. So I never got to see them at all. So I had a very good start, but it hasn't always been that easy. It's been really hard because you're only ever as good as your last body of work. So you can love your body of work, then it gets put out and it cannot sell. So it was really like, not until till I was about in my late 30s that I could actually have base and pay for my mortgage, support my children just using art. Before that, it was just incredibly hard. And I made it hard for myself because I'd basically start on series of work and I started off doing off-street projects, but I used to do in a different name, some of them, and they'd become more and more political as I went on. They'd look into different things. But so eventually I started making enough money to be a professional artist, and I could relax a bit. But you're only ever as good as your last body of work, you know? So it's always a risky business, but that's what makes it such fun. But you can love what you're doing and other people can't. You know, and they just won't sell, you know. Or you can do a whole body. I did a show once, 25 pieces. I think only 7 sold. 5 years later, a collector come around and bought the other pieces. So, and I just thought it was just dead wood and it sold. So it's a really hard business to be in, really hard business to get established in. I was just lucky. I know people far more talented than I am that have gone nowhere, and I'm just shocked they've gone nowhere. And I see their work they put out all the time, and I just think that's amazing. And they can't even get a show. So it's not a justified talent world, put it that way. But if you have the right subject and you make people inquisitive, you can sell work. And people are they're not interested. My work that sells well isn't just about the beautiful things, it's about the things that are jarring, the things that make you feel uneasy. And that's always been my place in the art world, is just basically making people feel uncomfortable, if you like, with what they get, you know?
That's a funny business model.
I know. Well, it often shocks me when people buy my work and they always send me photographs of where they placed it. I always ask them to send me photographs of where they placed it because I'm very curious. And I've had them placed in peculiar places before. But, I love seeing them in situ because especially if they go to another country, you can't deliver it. If it's in the UK and it's like a lot of money, it's a proper painting, you spend ages on it, I like to deliver it personally and speak to them. But You can't do that with everything. It'd just be impossible. You'd never have time to work.
So what were you planning on being before you become an artist then? What was your schooling heading towards?
Well, I was a runaway. I started running away at 14. I left school with no qualifications, nothing at all. I didn't know what to do. I joined the army. I was in the army 15 months. And then basically, my whole life changed and I had to think, right, what am I going to do? I got no education. I'm out the army. This is going to be tough. What can I do? And I had a friend that gave me a shout. He said, come and work in the fashion industry with me. He worked in London, the fashion industry. So I went up to work with him. I did it as just a test, designed my first collection. It got bought by Browns. Even though I didn't have any education before that, no qualifications, because I'd done that, an art school would see it as a qualification. And I was an adult student by that time. So they let me in on the basis of putting a collection in Browns on South Moulton Street. So I was really pleased about that.
That is pretty awesome to get that sort of moment in the sun very early on as well, because it is very hard, especially in anything that's art or entertainment. So, I mean, to get any sort of oxygen and get a breath is just, you feel like you're drowning all the time when you're young. I spent a lot of time, I was in hotels. I started off in hotels because, like you know, I kept failing at all my qualifications and I was a bit ill with stuff, so you know, but my first love was music, so I was just constantly working towards that, and getting any air was just almost impossible, partially because the industry's changed. We're going to take a quick break for the news. You're listening to Today's News Talk on TNT.
Welcome.
Coming up, important news.
TNT Radio News,
and that's the truth.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. German lawmakers across various political parties are showing support for a NATO-imposed no-fly zone over western Ukraine. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu acknowledged the need for a thorough examination of his government's response to the Hamas attack on October 7, 2023, during an interview with Dr. Phil McGraw. Former President Donald Trump delivered a speech in Wildwood, New Jersey, drawing tens of thousands of supporters in what was described as the largest political rally in the state's history.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show. I'm here with Paul McGowan. We're talking about his artwork, and your work, Paul, is very vibrant and colourful, with a palette full of dystopia thrown in. Have you always been drawn in by the enigmatic nature of the Orwellian?
You know what? Not originally, but I watched movies when I was younger that definitely affected me later, like Eraserhead. But really, my work started off as nothing like it is today. I was a minimalist. I used to paint in monochrome all the time. And my first show that totally sold was called White on White. And it's a very minimalist show. And I remember it very well because on the opening night, I didn't sell one piece and I was gutted. It was my first solo show. And I was down the beach with my girlfriend the next morning. And I said, I've got to go to the gallery because it's a coastal gallery in St. Ives. I walked in there and my dealer, who was the first dealer ever signed me, Bob Devereux, he went, Paul, you've sold 13 pieces in the morning. I was like, "Wait!" And it was like, that was a real good bump, So, so that's how he goes. You don't really know what's ever going to happen in the art world.
No. Go on.
Well, I've done loads of different things and I've tried loads of different, because my mind is erratic. When you're at art school, they try and teach you this linear path through art. So you stick to a subject and you work and work and work along it. My mind could never do it. Mine was more like a pyramid. I used to start off with loads of different bodies of work and I used to filter through them. And eventually they'd become one body of work. And that's how I'd always work. It wasn't like a traditional way at all. I used to get lambasted by my lecturers all the time about it, but I just couldn't work in any other way. I used to find it really boring, and I'd always multiple cross mediums, and I'd put oil and acrylic together and everything, and it used to really drive people nuts, you know. But it worked out really well for me. Sometimes I'd just paint on old curtains, and I was just playing with mediums and paint and material, because I never had that. I never went through like that stage of learning how to paint like O levels, A levels. I never went through all that, and I'm not the greatest draftsman in the world. I wasn't born super gifted or anything like that. Some of my friends are just amazing draftsmen, and they can't even sell a painting, you know, or a drawing or anything, and I can't work it out. I don't know what drives the art market. But it certainly isn't just talent. It's something else. You've got to get the subject matter right. And I've been quite lucky falling on the right subject matter on quite a few occasions. So it got me through. But it hasn't been easy. You know?
Artists are very strange creatures, I find. Same with, like I say, my experience mainly comes from musicians. So the worlds do cross quite regularly. But I found that there's a lot of people who are musicians who can only play other people's tunes. And then there's people who can only create their own stuff. And then there's a spectrum in between. Is that the same with art, do you think?
Yeah, it's exactly the same. But I know like dancers, I know all different types of artists. And we can all pretty much gel outside of politics and things that goes on. Because they've got interesting minds. I like their ideas they throw out. But I do think the art world has been captured at the moment by politics. I do, and I think it's a terrible thing. Because when I was a young art student, people were very libertarian. They believed in everybody's rights, everyone's freedoms. But now they're all like hardline socialists. And I don't know how that happens. Because you've got to remember, great artists like Noam Garbo run away from communism to come to Britain. Loads of the great Russian painters run to the West for freedom, you know. They were like forced into doing constructivism and things like that. But now, all art students, you speak to, you can get 30 art students in a room and 30 of them are socialists, you know. Yeah. I've got no problem with socialists. But they're all woke socialists, modern time ones, and they're a product of their era, I'm afraid. But I think you've got to look outside of everything political. But you can still be political. I've done loads of political work. So I used to make loads of political memes. I mean, you know, some people find me offensive. I just think it's satire, you know.
Yeah. But I mean... Do you ever go to offend, or do you always make the art just for what you want it to be, and you don't really have that sort of like idea when you're creating it? Is it just every piece is in particular an individual, or do you find that things like, you know, your experiences through things like COVID or Brexit or something, like they have a political enough, they have an effect on you enough politically that comes out in your art?
I have made intentionally political art, like the things I did for Brexit, the meme, but that was mainly in the form of memes that I used to put out all the time. But when it comes to, well, I obviously did coronavirus pandemic in 2018, way before the pandemic. But the reason why I did that is because I was actually looking up archaic hominids, archaic humans, basically, and how I've always been fascinated by our past. And I come across papers about how your different genetics that you've inherited from archaic hominids will basically, it helps your immune system. You'll have strengths and weaknesses because of it. You know, like in Europe, we're like 2 to 5% Neanderthal. In some parts of the world, they're still up to 15% Denisovan. If you're sub-Saharan African, you've got none of that. So we're all made up of different mixes. And as I was looking for it, I come across a paper, and it was basically about viruses and archaic humans. And I come across, well, I was looking, have you ever seen viruses under a microscope? They're the most beautiful thing you'll ever see, and they can be deadly. And there was a hell of a lot of information coming out about coronaviruses. There was a lot of research going into it pre-pandemic. You know, I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. And I'd like to think it was coincidental, but I don't know if I believe in coincidences that big anymore. But so I come across the coronavirus and I just fell in love with the look of it. So I designed my own one just in monochrome, just white. And I made it my label, and then I just finished basically I damaged my hand a few years ago. I didn't do it, somebody else did it, but I had like 6 operations on it. I have to wear a splint in the mornings. I can't use all fingers. I can only use one finger works, and that's just bone grafted onto the side of my hand. It's an absolute nightmare if you're a draftsman. So I can't even remember my point for telling you that. But the reason being is, working for me has become incredibly difficult because of the nerve damage in this hand. And for years and years and years, I've been inventing little objects to help me paint, to help me draw. And they've all been totally unsuccessful, absolutely useless. But at the end of the coronavirus series, when I got paid for it, I looked at it and I thought, how much time did it take me to do that? And how much money did I actually really make? So after the gallery had taken off their commissions and everything like that, and I looked at it and I looked at that piece of money, and that seems like, that's not a lot of money. So I worked out per hour. And even though the pieces have big price tags on them, when you consider how much work it takes me to do with this hand now, I broke it down and it was way under minimum wage. That's how bad it was.
When did you finish that series, though?
2018.
Wow. So did you sell them all off before the coronavirus started? And do you think they would have made a little bit more money if you had waited a little bit of time?
I've thought about this so many times. And no, I was right. First of all, there's no way I knew there'd be. Even when event 201 happened, I'd get, because I have an alert for anything to do with coronavirus sent to my computer, because I was always looking, sharking for images, basically. I never thought there would be this. I don't even think there was a pandemic. I'm sorry, I just don't, everything falls on the conspiracy side to me. There's too many coincidences going on. I just think that the whole thing was a crock of rubbish, and they just got some virus that, if you gave people how many people died with flu, like we got our numbers from dying with this coronavirus, you'd have the same numbers as you would with coronavirus. Because I had an orange alert. So I went into hospital for 3 weeks during coronavirus. Every single person caught it. Everyone caught it. I never caught it. I've never caught coronavirus. I'm totally unvaccinated. I don't know why I've never caught it, but I just don't. But I've only ever had flu once in my life, and I caught that in hospital as well. I don't know. I think they was doing a lot of research on different coronaviruses, and I do believe some strain of something got out, and then they used anything to use to implicate really extreme laws and push different things, and we were just used as, I can't believe people fell for it. I can't believe people actually stayed in. I mean, I would have broke, I, if they would have bricked me in my house, I'd have crawled up the chimney. There's no way I'm going to do it, but people really believed it. And you could also see the difference between when you saw the two-tier policing, because I also do works about, about Antifa. I've been picked on by so many Antifa groups before. Black Lives Matter, I'm a social documenter. So if it's going on, I'll document it. And that's all I do is document and interpret, tackling the nuclear family, everything. I've done all these things. Did not make me a lot of friends when it comes to the extreme left wing. I was really targeted by them. I've got thick skin, so I just laughed my way through it. I don't care. I don't care at all. The whole thing, I just don't go along with it. I think the narrative was, I think people have woken up a lot now, but there's the majority of people are still pretty much blindfolded. But that was used to strip ourselves of, right. It was a testing ground, It was a testing ground to see what they'd get away with Westerners. Because we've had luxury of this full freedom. Well, even though it's not real freedom, but we're freer than any other country I can think of. We can speak. We've always been able to say what we want. We can condemn our leaders. When I was living in Indonesia, I said something about, I can't even remember his name, their king at the time, and I was told to be quiet. So you'd get arrested for that. And we've had this luxury for ages, and I think they want to get rid of that luxury, because it's not a luxury, it's a real thing, and I think they want to get rid of that. I also believe in people replacement. You know, I'm full-blown, I'm gone now, full-blown conspiracy theorist. I don't even want to be called a truther anymore. I just like conspiracy theorist, you know?
Yeah, you are in good company here. Listen, we got to go to a quick break, but you are definitely in good company, and I know the people in the chat will feel the same as that. You're listening to today's News Talk on TNT.
While serving in Vietnam, a grenade took my ability to see. Today, I'm a sculptor creating new visions. Now, my fingers are my eyes. As a veteran, I know the challenges of life can be great. In my art, turning a lump of clay into something beautiful, that means a lot to me. Life is like that. We each must use what we can to make things better.
DAV helps veterans like Michael get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
Now, I show others how they can create something with their own hands. With support from DAV, more veterans can shape their lives into a thing of beauty. My victory is bringing beauty into the world.
Michael Naranjo, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
One scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
When the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
I'm relying on luck, but who knows if it'll be on my side.
When it comes to disasters and emergencies, it's not a matter of if, but when. Take control. 1. Assess your needs. 2. Make a plan. 3. Engage your support network. Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell.
Speaking on the issues that impact. Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk TNT.
So we're back here on today's News Talk TNT. I'm Johnny Vedmore, and we're talking to Paul McGowan, and we're talking about art, we're talking about experience, we're talking about COVID. And, you know, you were describing your experiences there and how, you know, you were like, I'm not going to be told not to go out. And that this was happening in the West. When my coronavirus experience started in Chile in South America, and there it basically they were enacting the things that they would enact in Britain and the West later on, and they were testing it out in those areas. So I find that's tends to be what they do. They tend to go to these far off places, test out all of the different mechanisms for keeping us all chained, and then they like to chain us. And I think you are right, or I think they do want to take away the right for us to question basic things that we see as normal. So what was your experience like during COVID? What was that period of your life? Did you go out and did you get stopped, or you know, how has that helped you mold for your current trajectory, and where are you off to now?
Well, during COVID, I was waiting for a hip replacement. And I wasn't waiting for a hip replacement. I was waiting for an operation on my hip. And I was just about to go in, and then NHS England shut down the NHS. So my operation was cancelled. Took a year and a half before that operation happened. So when it was there, I was going to first go in, because I had an accident out my back garden. I'd done a painting on this Napoleonic prison door, some drawings. I'd use it in artwork. And I'd sold it, and I was trying to move it. It was really heavy, and without my hand, I couldn't grip it, and I slipped, and it fell on me. And I drove my hip into my pelvis and damaged the bone. So first of all, it started off, they was going to hoover it out and clean it up. But then, because I was left so long in that condition, I went in one day, they said, Paul, we're sorry, but we've got to take the lot. I went, what? They said, you need a full hip replacement now. It's really degraded, because they'd left me that long. So I had that done in a private hospital. And in private hospitals, there were no masks at all. Nothing, there was nothing like that. And they wouldn't even accept the government test. And I asked the woman, why didn't you take the government test? right? And she said, basically, because it tests positive for everything, and that's her words. That was her words. So this private hospital had their own test, their own test. So I was okay with that. Went in, got it done. They did a brilliant job. Come out, and then I got another hospital appointment because I was lucky because I was Orange Alert. I had access to surgery and hospital treatment when loads of people didn't have it, and that was a sham. That was disgusting. So I went into a hand clinic, teach me how to use this hand because I can't bend all the fingers easily and there's tricks you learn. And it did help me a lot. But while I was in there, I've been in that hospital quite a lot and I knew one of the nurses. And she goes, Paul, jump in. She put me in a wheelchair and she wheeled me and I made a film of it all around the hospital of every major ward shut, everything. And the hospital holds thousands of people, this big hospital. And I filmed it all like that. And I posted out videos because the narrative on TV was the hospitals are brimming and nobody can get in them because they're packed with coronavirus people. It wasn't. I even know there was only five people in there with coronavirus at the time. I know for a fact. So basically, obviously, I got banned from that video. And then Ukraine was kicking off and I was writing a lot about Ukraine. And then they took all my social media. They took all the ones I was using. They took all my Facebook, all my accounts, all my groups. My income was based on my art groups because I hate giving galleries commission money. And I always had enough collections over the years that I could post in those groups. Collectors were in, but I deleted a lot. And they took my Twitter as well. And I was lifetime bans on both as a dangerous person or organization. But what really gets me about the Twitter ban a lot, it's really annoying. There was people that made fan accounts. There's one up there, Paul McGowan. It doesn't even say it's a fan account. And they can open a Paul McGowan account. And they're good people. They post good stuff about me. It could easily be a negative account, but they don't. I haven't posted for a long time. But also give me control of that account. But I'm not allowed to have my account, but somebody can have an account with my photograph on it, all my artwork, but I can't have one. So basically, Facebook's, they done me under some act called Dangerous Persons or Organization. And I remember I was up at Iconic Studios, and I was chatting with David Icke. And David goes to me, what'd they get you for in the end, Paul? And I went, Dangerous Person or Organization. He went, yeah. So, you know, these things are just... So many people, they got 16 of my friends in one day just for owning meme groups, you know. But all the things they banned us for all came true, like Ukraine, like Hunter Biden, that laptop, all those things, they all turned out to be true. And they didn't give everyone their accounts back, so they just don't want us online, you know. So luckily for me, Jason Miller from Getter, he heard what happened to me and he gave me a red check Getter account. But I don't use it, I'm saving it for the elections. To be honest, I've got like one fake account that I used to spy on my kids, making sure they're not doing anything wrong, and chat to a few of my old friends. But I don't use social media anymore. And I tell you now, my life is better for it. But my income has been, it massively hit my income because, you know, I'm now relying on galleries. And when I do my new series, which is about basically NGOs and any unelected powerful organization, the Lucis Trust, anything like that, my next body of work is going to be about that. But that's got to go through galleries now. But also as well, just for Brexit and just for Trump, because I supported both, you know, a lot of galleries, there was two galleries in particular I've been with for a really long time. And they were annoyed about Brexit. But after Trump, that's it. They sent my work back. And I said, well, I've been with you for years. But they even sent back the works I do under a pseudonym. So nobody would have known it was me. It was just purely they were so annoyed, you know. And it's just like politics, you know. You vote a side, you know. I was anti-Hillary Clinton, you know.
Yeah, I lost a lot of friends with talking about Hunter Biden in I think it was when it first came out. I lost a lot of people who had been really supportive of my work, really supportive of me. Suddenly he said, oh, no, that's a bridge too far. I can't believe any of that trash, even though there's video and images as evidence and lots of people reporting it. I'm not willing to look at it because it goes against my worldview. Now, you're clearly a family man. You obviously have a big heart for your family. What type of world do you think our generation will leave for the children?
One worse than what we joined.
Is that abnormal?
I mean, we've let so much slip on our watch, so much shit. We've allowed... Look, I was talking about censorship in around about 2009, 2010, censorship, the encroachment of censorship. So I lost my first ever thread. I basically had a Paul McGowan climate thread on Twitter, and it was deleted because it didn't like what I was saying. I'm a total environmentalist. I just don't believe in CO2 narrative. I just don't believe it. And I think there's lots of other people that don't believe in it. And I just think that's all part of it. And, you know, because this is only really happening to the West. It's not happening to anybody else. I mean, everything's, it's like we've lost a war. It's like we've lost a war and we're being punished. I don't know what's going on, you know, the WEF, all of it, you know, Britain got out of, you know, out of Europe and what, you know, then you've got the right, then immediately after the WEF influence become really powerful, you know, and it was on the telly all the time. They were dominant, the UN, you know, all these big organizations, you know, Rockefeller organizations, are basically telling us what to do. And this is why I'm a Brexiteer. I don't believe in anyone. I believe in democracy, real democracy, you know, people voting in their communities, you know.
So you still consider yourself as a Brexiteer then?
Totally.
Is that a whole ideological sort of stance that keeps going even once the supposed Brexit has happened?
It's not a real Brexit. It's not the Brexit we wanted at all. Because I want to get out of the European Convention. Everything I want us to make our own laws based around our own people, and that includes everybody that's here. But I also don't like the subversion of our nation, the Islamification of, you know, the UK. I don't feel comfortable with any of it. It's a massive change, and it's happened so rapidly that there's obviously a major plan there. I mean, Ireland is what's happening. I've been reporting on Ireland for a really long time. I've done many shows for TNT about Ireland. And if you look back to those early shows and you look what you've got in Ireland now, that was all predictable. That was all predictable. People don't like this mass change. People don't like the mass change. Like the kid, like I remember I've been to my kids' school twice talking about telling teachers off about scaring my children about climate change, just overblown fears. And there's not going to be any major change. There's not going to be any major change. The climate's always changed. It always happens. We've got low CO2. And CO2, anything that greens the planet, it's literally the green movement. It's literally green. If you make the planet greener, I'm happy, you know?
Yeah, I'm looking in the chat, and Lord Melbury says, Brexit without the exit. We're in the Hotel California. You can check out, but you can never leave. And that does seem like the way it is at the moment. So do you always tend to fall on the conspiratorial side of the fence nowadays? Is it just because these are all brazen conspiracies currently happening in real time?
Yeah, I do. I absolutely do. Even when you look at Russian collusion with Donald Trump, if you look at that, you just think, how manufactured is that? Even though they knew about steel, they knew everything about that, and then it still gets pushed. And you can still put on American TV and they still use it. Now, look, that's been debunked so many times, it's unbelievable. But it was pushed down people's throats all the time. All the narrative. If you've got a narrative or a belief that has to be pushed down people's throats, like, you know, like anything, the trans issue or any of these issues, if you're pushing it down people's throats, there's an agenda behind it. Because people should be able to make their own mind up, and it shouldn't be a big deal. It should be, yeah, I think that, I think that. And then we'll go on. It's freedom of speech, isn't it? Everyone should make their own mind up. But when the TV is constantly going bam, 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 sticking words down your throat, I mean, you've got to get a little bit suspicious, you know?
Yeah, I think a load of us have been left a little bit suspicious now. Well, listen, I tell you, it's been really nice catching up with you, getting to know an artist and an artist's perspective of what's been going on, because we artists and we writers and we musicians and we painters and, you know, us lot, we're often on the other side of the fence, and we're often kind of like pushed out of main society. So thanks for coming on, Paul. Where can people find you if you've been taken offline mostly?
You can't. I never update my old website. I'm not updating it until I've gotten the new body of work. And then that website's going to be totally taken down because I can't do deadlines anymore with this hand. It takes me forever to finish anything.
Yeah.
I never really know how long it's going to take. But so that will be taken down eventually. But if you want to contact me, don't go to the Twitter account and message that, because it's not me. But you can go to Getter and find Paul McGowan. It's got a red check behind it. It was me and Nigel Farage, and away you go.
Okay, awesome. Paul, thank you for coming on the Johnny Vedmore Show. Really nice to meet you, my friend.
Cheers, Johnny. Cheers, TNT.
Excellent. And so, thanks to all my guests today, Paul McGowan, Gary Brode, and Tim Hinchliffe. We have Ian Carroll on the show tomorrow, so that will be totally wild. Me and Ian Carroll get to sit down and talk some Epstein stuff. Make sure you tune in again. Thank you to all my friends in the chat, who are my favorite part of my show, of course. And thanks to everyone watching and listening. Your support keeps us going. Up next on TNT is the one and only Mark Morano Show. Stay tuned, stay safe, stay awake, don't go changing, and thanks for being with me. See you tomorrow on today's News Talk TNT.